This is All In. I'm Matt Pelser. Today, we're talking about Indiana's economic situation as the pandemic continues and shows no signs of disappearing anytime soon. 5 months into the pandemic and several of the immediate forms of financial aid, like the one-time stimulus check and the additional weekly federal unemployment benefits, have run their course. Where does that leave Hoosiers? If you have questions or comments on our show today, we'd love to hear from you. Find us on Facebook or Twitter at All In Indiana. You can also leave us a voicemail at 866-476-3881. We just need your name, where you're calling from, and a quick question or comment, and we'll do our best to get it into the conversation today with our live panel later on in the hour. Again, that's 866-476-3881. Joining me now is Indiana Public Broadcasting's workforce development reporter, Justin Hicks. Justin, thanks for joining us today.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
So let's start with unemployment numbers. Can you tell us where Indiana stands right now?
Yeah, so the big number to look at here is 11.2%. So that's the June unemployment rate, meaning that 11.2% of Indiana's labor force is unemployed. But I'll also say, too, take that number with a big grain of salt. BLS, the Bureau of Labor Statistics, who calculates that, has noted that in the past few months, calculating the unemployment rate has been a little difficult, because the way they do this is it's a survey. It's like they call people up and they say, hey, do you have a job? You know, are you working? Where are you working? That kind of thing. And then, you know, they call the same people every single time. But lately, apparently, those people have not been answering their phones. So it's been hard for BLS to get a really, really solid number. But, you know, it's a problem all across the country. So 11.2% is where we stand, and that's our best guess.
And so how does this current rate compare to the past several months since the pandemic began?
Yeah, so it's been going down pretty steadily since April. April was where we saw the first indication of the pandemic in the unemployment rate numbers. The March survey basically kind of just missed the early effects of the pandemic. So, you know, in April, we shot up from 3% to 17.5%, like overnight.
Wow.
And then in May, it went down to 12.3. So we're kind of slowly going down. We're definitely not at 17.5 anymore. And that's great.
And as a benchmark, can you remind us what the unemployment rate looked like in Indiana at this time last year?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was 3.3% in June 2019. So
very low.
Yeah, I mean, huge difference. And I should also add, too, that in 2019, not only was the unemployment rate going down, but another number to look at was just the sheer raw number of people in our labor force, which I think went over like 3 million for the first time in a long time, maybe the first time ever. So our labor force is growing, unemployment was going down, you know, things were looking great in 2019, and now things have taken a big U-turn.
So how does our unemployment rate here in Indiana compare to other states?
Yeah, so when you look at percentage, actually, we're kind of right there with the nationwide average. The nationwide average is 11.1 or 0.2, I forget which, it depends on if you seasonally adjust or not. So, you know, if you look at the rate itself, we're kind of right on par with the national average. And if you kind of rank it as well, you know, between where we rank between other states, we're kind of tied at 37th if this was a big race. I wouldn't really say it's much of a race, but if you wanted to think of it that way, we're tied in 37th position. And, you know, to compare to other states near us, Illinois and Ohio, they're both a little bit over 14.5%. Wisconsin's down around 8%, so they're doing decent over there. The weird one, though, to talk about is Kentucky, where it went somehow from 11% to 4% in 1 month. And I honestly don't totally believe those numbers. I think, again, it's part of that weird statistical anomaly stuff going on in BLS, because I don't think anyone thinks that in Kentucky everything has been solved and they're suddenly back to where they were overnight. So it's, again, why you should probably take these numbers with a big grain of salt.
So better than some states, not as good as some other states, but the numbers might be fuzzy. So while we've been facing these unemployment numbers, the economy's been aided in the past several months by the Federal CARES Act, which added an additional $600 payment to the unemployment benefits that the state offers. But these additional payments expired this past Saturday. What impact do you anticipate this change is going to have?
Yeah, so that's going to have a huge change. So in Indiana, on regular unemployment benefits, you get 47% of your average weekly income from whatever you made. And that's calculated from about a year ago from the way they do this. They look at a couple quarters, business quarters back to get that income. So that's what people are going to be making now is 47% of whatever they made roughly a year ago. And also, to be fair, when you think about that extra $600, $600 goes really, really far in Indiana as compared to like New York City, where I moved here from, where $600 doesn't get you very far. That's maybe half your rent, you know, if you're splitting your apartment. So, you know, I think when Congress was kind of deciding on these numbers, they had to try to pick a number that they thought would be sort of fair to people who lived in New York City all the way down to Indiana. And $600 was sort of somewhere in between, I guess. But now they're realizing, oh, wait, that's a lot of money in rural areas. But even so, you know, I think people agree that they need something. They're not necessarily asking for $600, but they know that 47% of their weekly income is just not going to cut it. And they're going to have to make some significant changes to their lifestyle.
So while the additional unemployment benefits were available, was everyone who qualified for those benefits getting them?
Not quite. And that's one thing that I've heard a lot of as I've been asking people, you know, about this situation with the extra $600. A lot of people have said, wait a second, you know, why are we talking about the extra $600 when we know people who have been waiting 12, 13 weeks without any payment at all? And that's a big problem. So I've talked to DWD about that, and they say those are really tricky issues. You know, there are people whose employment situations never really fit cleanly into their, you know, automatic system. So, you know, if you had switched jobs maybe last year, or you had to take time off for an illness last year, you know, like a significant thing like surgeries or whatever, you know, that kind of really adds a kink into the program. And those kinks take human beings to work out. And right now we're kind of in short supply of human beings to take a look at those claims and make those changes on a case-by-case basis. So, yeah, not everyone has received benefits, and they've been waiting many weeks, and that's a really desperate situation.
We're talking to Indiana Public Broadcasting's workforce development reporter Justin Hicks about the current state of Indiana's unemployment benefits. So what kinds of struggles or frustrations have you heard from people about that process?
Yeah, I mean, the biggest struggle I've heard about the process is, you know, confusion over the language and confusion over the terms, you know, and that's just because unemployment terms and lingo is not something you think about every day or should have to think about every day. And so, you know, when you do that, you call somebody up on the phone and you call the DWD hotline. And for a long time, that DWD hotline, of course, was really clogged. People had to wait hours and hours, and then they would get, you know, cut off. I've been told the wait time has gone down quite significantly. So the waiting is not necessarily as big of a problem. The problem now is when you call the DWD hotline, people are expecting to be kind of like when you call your cable company, you know, and you say like, hey, I have a problem in my account. Can you look it up? Oh, yeah, sure. I see the problem right here. We click the button and we fix it, you know. But the way the DWD hotline is set up, the people that you talk to on those hotlines are people who are there to answer general questions. They're not, they don't even have access to your account specifics. So they can't, they physically can't pull up your account. And it's really frustrating for people who say, I have a very specific problem with my account. I just need to talk to somebody to get a little button clicked. And the people can't do that. So that's extremely frustrating.
State's been slowly reopening throughout the summer, and a lot of businesses have been trying to do what they can to operate under new circumstances. Are there, in fact, jobs to return to right now?
There are jobs, yeah. And you know, you're starting to see some places kind of reopen. So there are jobs now. Some manufacturing facilities are, as they're sort of coming back online, where we're seeing a lot of hiring again in a couple of different sectors. And another sector that, of course, is hiring a lot right now is CNAs, registered nurses. So if you have any sort of medical background or any kind of medical credential, you kind of have your pick of the litter at the moment. The tricky thing about these jobs that are rehiring is that, number one, for some people, it requires a total career shift, and they're not quite ready to do that. They're kind of holding out hope that their old job will maybe come back. Or the other part is that the new jobs that are coming online maybe aren't paying quite as much. You know, if you're a business and you are still kind of shaky and uncertainty about the economy, you maybe aren't going to raise wages right now. So the jobs that are hiring maybe pay a little bit less than the job that the person had before, And that's a hard pill to swallow, to say, I'm going to go forward and get this new job, even though this new job maybe doesn't even pay anywhere close to what I used to make.
Congress is debating proposals for another coronavirus relief bill. Do we have any insight as to what further assistance we can anticipate there at the federal level?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So on the unemployment front, as well as a couple other fronts, we're probably going to see something that's in between the House Democrats' HEROES Act they passed back in May and the Senate Republicans' HEALS Act, which they sort of just announced yesterday. So the Democrats want the $600 to be extended to the end of the year, but the Republicans want just $200 for a few months, and then they're going to switch to 70% of a worker's average weekly income by October. So it's probably going to fall somewhere between those two places as the Democrats and Republicans negotiate, but there is at least an understanding that something needs to be done here and that regular unemployment probably won't be enough. So we're all going to find out together in the next few weeks.
So you've actually been talking to people trying to navigate all of this. What have you been hearing?
Yeah, I mean, a lot of people are essentially oscillating back and forth between feeling down and kind of a little depressed, and then also angry as well. I mean, it's sort of the stages of grief, and it's a cycle. So one person that I spoke to that I have some tape of, Karina Ertel, she lives in Indianapolis. She worked events downtown until early March, and then actually right before kind of everything went haywire, she just found out she was pregnant. So she lost her job, found out she was pregnant kind of all at the same time. And now without that extra $600, she says she's only going to make $84 a week in unemployment assistance.
Oh, my word.
So,
you know, I know I'm going to be getting food assistance, whether or not I have to move in with someone. Maybe my landlord will be forgiving. I'm nervous. I'm anxious, but I'm also hopeful that someone's doing something to make sure that they're going to help us. And if not, I guess I'm going to have to figure out, I don't know. I'm almost at a loss. I have no idea what to feel at this moment. Like, I don't want to stress myself out more than I have been, because I know that's not going to help me, you know, with this. I need to be thinking clearly on a plan.
And so that's really what I've been hearing a lot of, right, is just people feeling like I'm trying to be hopeful, but I'm just not sure what's going to happen here in the future. And if something doesn't change, I don't know how I can make ends meet.
All right. Indiana Public Broadcasting's workforce development reporter, Justin Hicks, thanks for your reporting and thanks for talking with us today.
Thanks for having me.
And when we come back, we'll continue the conversation around Indiana's economy with a few new voices. If you have questions or comments for us, let us know on Facebook or Twitter at All in Indiana. Or, of course, you can leave us a voicemail at 866-476-3881. We'd love to hear your voice in the conversation this hour. Again, 866-476-3881. I'm Matt Pelser. Back in 90 seconds, this is All In. This is All In. I'm Matt Pelser. Today we're talking about Indiana's economic situation as the pandemic continues. We'd love your questions and comments on the topic. We're on Facebook and Twitter at All In Indiana, or you can leave us a voicemail at 866-476-3881, 866-476-3881. We're joined live now by three guests. Kyle Anderson is a clinical professor of business economics at Indiana University Kelly School of Business. Kyle, welcome to All In.
Thanks a lot.
Josh Richardson is with us. He's chief of staff at the Indiana Department of Workforce Development. Welcome, Josh.
Thanks so much for having me. Happy to be here.
Barbara Quant is the Indiana State Director of the National Federation of Independent Business. Barbara, welcome.
Hi, Matt, and thank you for having me back on the program.
It's great to have you back. Kyle Anderson, we're going to start with you. We just heard in the last segment about how individuals are going to be directly impacted by the expiration of the additional $600 weekly federal unemployment benefit. What impact do you anticipate this is going to have on Indiana's economy at large?
It's going to be significant, and we'll have to see exactly what shakes out of Washington, because as Justin mentioned, I'm sure there will be some negotiations that go on and there will be more support stimulus that come. But until it does, or if it doesn't happen to come, it's going to be a sizable impact. That $600 a week just in central Indiana, that's about $300 million a month in spending that people are getting that they wouldn't otherwise have. And they're able to go out and, whether it's pay their rent, buy food, buy staples, whatever they're able to do with it, it's very beneficial, not just to those who receive it, but to the businesses that benefit from it and other folks.
So then for the months that those added benefits were in place, would you say that they were effective in keeping the economy steady? I mean, we definitely saw a downturn.
Well, we definitely saw a downturn, but I think it would have been significantly worse had that support not been there. So, yes, I would say it was effective. We are both in terms of keeping the unemployment picture not being worse than what it was, and in just helping keep, you know, businesses and economic activity moving.
Josh, states were hit hard and fast when unemployment numbers skyrocketed at the onset of the pandemic. And so what were the big challenges your department faced there in the beginning?
Yeah, so many. And one thing to point out is you had Justin Hicks on earlier, sort of relaying where we were at a year ago. You know, state workforce agencies and those who administer unemployment insurance programs are largely funded by projections for workload. And so we were essentially funded by the federal government to process claims at those really low levels, 3.5% unemployment rates. And so, you know, really when this came up, we knew we were going to have to add staff. We knew we were going to have to add them very quickly. But we were also counting on the federal government to provide funding. And so, you know, it was just trying to make sure we got things in the right order, that we had the funding and that we had the staff that we needed to support it. And largely, I think that we've done fairly well with that, but lots of challenges along the way.
Unemployment systems, I mean, can be complicated even in the best of times. What are the common complications you hear from people who are just trying to navigate the whole system?
So, yeah, and you know, it's so hard because there are so many different things going on that it's hard even to point to common issues. You know, most claims that people file move through our system without the need for human intervention. Our system is modernized in Indiana. A lot of the work that we do is automated. And so long as you're in that path that follows the clean automated path, benefits move through quickly. But so, for example, if you quit a job because the circumstances, whether it was related to coronavirus or otherwise, caused you to quit, or perhaps your employer alleged that you were fired for cause around this time, those can move into a much more difficult path. And even some things like deductible income, maybe you had a couple weeks of vacation pay that your employer was paying out after your separation. All of those things ultimately have to make their way through trained staff, which is really at a premium and has been since the coronavirus situation. So those would be common examples of things that may slow down the person's processing.
Some people continue to have trouble getting the benefits that they've applied for. I guess, what's your recommendation to somebody who's still waiting?
So the number of people waiting should be, you know, it's fairly small at this point in time. Of course, it's still real for those that have been. You know, one is make sure that they're timely responding to any information we send out to them. We're often either calling these individuals, sometimes it's through email to collect further information. Obviously, the more responsive they are, the quicker that we can be. But those numbers, like I said, are dwindling pretty rapidly. And usually it's because there is some issue that is still a conflict potentially between the employer and the individual that's causing those issues. When it comes to this pandemic unemployment assistance program, which I really do think is different, that the program for the self-employed and independent contractors, that's been a little bit more difficult to implement. And so, you know, there's just have been challenges associated with that. It's easy for me to say to be patient. I do believe that we're working through these pretty quickly with fewer people waiting, but they're certainly welcome to call our contact center. Wait times are down there and they can check in on the status of their claim there.
Now, if somebody applied for unemployment while the additional federal benefits were available, but they haven't gotten benefits yet, will they still get those benefits, that extra $600 a month? Or is that the number?
So that's a great question. I appreciate you asking that. So absolutely. So the $600 is tied to the weeks of eligibility. And so we're really looking at when you were unemployed and which weeks did you file for. And to the extent that they are later determined to be eligible for weeks in which that $600 was in effect, we'll still be authorized to pay that amount. So, you know, every once in a while, I'll see something on social media that someone says, I hope that they decide soon or otherwise, you know, they won't have to pay me the $600. It doesn't work that way. It'll attach to the weeks. And so long as they are eligible for benefits in those weeks, then the $600 would stay available to them.
Barbara Quant, you joined us in the early days of the pandemic to talk about the support that small businesses needed. And at the time, most businesses were waiting on the Paycheck Protection Program, or PPP loans. Can you remind us how those loans operate?
Oh, boy, those were pretty dire days.
They were.
With folks waiting for that PPP plan to come through. And thank God they did come through. In most cases, small business owners did get relief through the PPP plan. The problem now, of course, is that most have used it. I think we, on our most recent survey, 71% of small businesses have used up the money they got through the PPP plan and are going to need more support going forward.
I mean, have those loans proven largely to be effective or as effective as hoped?
Well, it's always, you can quantify that, but I would say it wasn't necessarily what they were expecting, but it was a lot better than what we were afraid it was going to be back when I last spoke with you.
Well, we spoke with some business owners, but since then, and I think specifically restaurant owners have said that they haven't taken advantage because of the caveats that come with them, having to keep staff on and really not having anything for them to do. Has anything been worked out for those businesses to whom the PPP really just can't apply under the terms that are given?
Yeah, the restaurants and bars were hit absolutely the hardest, and they're still feeling the pain. And we've lost a good number of them. We may not know it yet, but they're close to going out of business. And because of the way they're structured and the pay. A lot of restaurants have used it, though. I will, at least in our survey, it's a minority that have not taken advantage of the PPP plan.
Some businesses can apply to have their loans forgiven. Can you explain how this is going to work?
Yes. Once they've used the money, then they apply with the SBA to have those loans forgiven, and they work through that with their bank. And at first, the rules were pretty onerous. They've relaxed that a bit. We now have not just 8 weeks to meet the qualifications, but 24 weeks. And so once they've done that, they work through it, and the rules are more flexible than they were initially, where you can use it for more expenses than just payroll. Most of it, they reduced the amount that was required for payroll, so that you could have other operating expenses be included.
We're talking about Indiana's current economic situation as the pandemic rolls on. And we're joined live by three guests. Kyle Anderson is a clinical professor of business economics at Indiana University Kelley School of Business. Barbara Quant, who we just heard from, is the Indiana State Director of the National Federation of Independent Business. And Josh Richardson is Chief of Staff at the Indiana Department of Workforce Development. And Josh, we have a listener voicemail from Gary who has a question or comment for you. Let's listen to that now.
Hi, my name is Gary. I'm calling from Indianapolis, and I'm interested in what you and your guests would have to say about self-employed workers, gig workers, people who make their money, their living from playing music. Thank you very much.
Josh, we touched a little bit on that, but I think it's worth expanding on. Do you have anything for Gary?
Yeah, so, you know, this is really an interesting situation. It's certainly not all musicians or artists, but many of them do not earn wages as a W-2 traditional employee. So they weren't covered by the traditional unemployment insurance system. However, most are covered under the Pandemic Unemployment Assistance Program that Congress passed as part of the CARES Act. Really allows unemployment benefits to apply to 1099 workers, members of the gig economy, self-employed. And so, artists are traditionally part of that. Now, you know, again, that's a brand new program that we essentially built from the ground up to try to work through here. But we did try to streamline that application process. So they'll file a regular claim for unemployment benefits. If they have no wages, they'll be denied for the regular program. But then we give them the ability to file for those federal benefits. So that program, by the way, It stays in effect through the end of 2020 under the current legislation. However, it also right now is receiving the benefits of that $600 additional payment a week. And so it will drop back down to that, to the normal scale of benefits in Indiana, and their benefits could go back down to that $390 or under mark that regular benefits apply. So, you know, they'll be interested as well to see whether or not Congress extends or modifies in some way the additional compensation. But they are eligible for benefits in most cases at this point in time.
Okay, thanks for that question, Gary, and thanks, Josh, for your response. Kyle Anderson, we've been seeing rising cases of COVID-19 in the state, and consequently, a lot of businesses have had to pause or reverse their reopening plans. What are the economic consequences of this sort of back and forth?
Well, I think it just is going to prolong the slowdown in economic activity. I think it creates a lot of uncertainty. The unemployment number is unlikely to go down very much because if I'm a business owner, you know, other than, as Barbara talked about, some of the requirements for keeping employees around, I'm really going to cut back on my expenses given that all that uncertainty. I don't want to rehire workers right now just to turn around and find out that our business has to be closed and we're going to have to go and turn around and lay workers back off. So I think that uncertainty around whether we're actually getting the virus under control is going to have a direct negative impact on economic activity.
Josh, just a few weeks ago, Indiana saw a big spike in new claims for unemployment insurance, which was attributed to fraudulent claims from foreign identity thieves trying to steal money. How did the state handle that?
Well, so it's still a work in progress. Well, what we've seen around the nation is that many states have been targeted by schemes like this, using stolen identities to try to push through unemployment claims. And so, you know, I think we were on the lookout for it in Indiana. And when we saw those numbers jump, we knew that it was there. We'd found some fraud before. But basically, you know, we took a slight pause on processing those claims just for a matter of days. Well, we really did some data analytics trying to identify which claims were legitimate and which ones were fraudulent. I think for the most part, we've been successful that we've seen the claims for those pandemic unemployment benefits fall back to the levels that we would have expected them to be. But we're certainly still seeing attempts, and I know that we will again see attempts to obtain those benefits fraudulently. At the same time, it has resulted in the case where some individuals may have shared characteristics with fraudulent claims and may have found themselves locked out temporarily from their account. I think we've mostly cleaned that up as individuals have called in, established their identity, established that they are the rightful owner of the Social Security number used to file the claim. And so, you know, we're moving through it, but I don't think we're done with it yet. We'll continue to see attempts at fraud in the program.
Josh, we have a message from Wendy on Facebook who says, I filed for unemployment 10 weeks ago and have yet to receive any money. I've called DWD at least 4 times. The wait times are not down. In the last week, I had to hold for anywhere from 51 minutes to an hour and a half. Yesterday, I was told that I've been on the expedite list since July 21st. I've spent almost all of my savings and cannot pay bills or afford health insurance payments in August. Yes, as Justin Hicks said in the first segment, is what she's referring to there. I am desperate. What would you have to say to Wendy, who appears to be having a hard time getting benefits?
So it's really hard. I think what our numbers show us is that over time, we have made progress against the individuals that are waiting. For someone like Wendy that's been waiting, I understand that she has little comfort in the fact that most have processed quickly. It certainly is nearing a time now where it's unusual for a claim to last that long. I think wait times have gone up slightly here as we've dealt with the effects of some of the attempts to clean up the fraud and allow people to reclaim those accounts. But you know, I don't have a real easy answer to that question. She's certainly in a challenging spot. What I can say is that we are working as hard as we can to work through these oldest claims, trying to make sure that we provide the relief that's there. Certainly without looking into her case, I couldn't give a real good answer or explanation for why maybe hers is different than the others. But it likely is, just knowing that it's been that long.
We have another listener voicemail. This one's from Bonita. Let's listen.
Hello, my name is Bonita. I'm calling from South Bend, Indiana. And the unemployment DWD office, the wait times are absolutely ridiculous. you know, you do not get return phone calls or anything else. And I know they have a backlog. They're working with people. They've been doing this since March. But it's absolutely ridiculous for the wait time.
Uh-oh, Josh, another complaint, I'm sorry to say. We have about a minute left in this segment. Any response for Bonita?
Yeah, well, so again, I know that this is happening from time to time. I'll tell you that prior to the pandemic, we had 40 people dedicated to answering phone calls and contacts to our call center. At this point in time, the number is over 400. So, you know, we've got a 10 times increase in the number of people that can respond to these. But we saw, you know, really a 20 times increase in the number of claims that were filed. And so we have struggled in some areas. But again, by and large, you know, if you look back to the month of April, almost 96% of the weeks that were filed for the month of April, which were, you know, hundreds of thousands, have been satisfied. And so, you know, again, we're working really hard on this. I don't want to try to pretend like that is something that we're okay with or comfortable with. We're working to get better. But at the same time, you know, we have done a lot to try to make sure that we can provide the kind of support that Hoosiers need at this time.
There's a lot more to talk about. We'll keep the conversation going. After a quick break, we're talking with experts and advocates about the challenges Indiana's economy is facing right now. And if you would like to join the conversation, we're on Facebook and Twitter at All In Indiana, or you can leave us a voicemail at 866-476-3881. 866-476-3881. We'll get it in front of our panel sometime before the end of the hour. I'm Matt Pelser. We're back in 90 seconds. This is All In. This is All In. I'm Matt Pelser. Back now to our discussion on how the state is economically faring as the pandemic continues. We're joined again by our three guests. Kyle Anderson is a clinical professor of business economics at Indiana University's Kelly School of Business. Josh Richardson is chief of staff at the Indiana Department of Workforce Development. Barbara Quant is the Indiana State Director of the National Federation of Independent Business. And as always, we would love your questions and comments. We're on Facebook and Twitter at All In Indiana, or you can leave us a short voicemail with your first name and where you're calling from at 866-476-3881. 866-476-3881. Barbara, the PPP loans have been extended until August 8th, but you are advocating for more than just additional funds. What else do small businesses need to survive right now?
Oh, my goodness. They need a lot. Most have used up the PPP, and they're going to have to lay off if they don't get any additional relief. They need financial assistance, another PPP sort of loan process. They need liability protections, and they need protections from these frivolous lawsuits that are going to be springing up. They need unemployment insurance reform. When we talk about Josh, he's certainly got his hands full there.
Indeed.
And with the $600 stipend that they're currently getting, it is problematic here in the state of Indiana for small businesses, because what's happened is they were shut down, and then as they started to open back up, they couldn't find employees. Their employees didn't want to come back because the benefits are at least more money than they were making prior to the shutdown. So that's a problem. And so I could go on the tax relief, allowing PPP expenses to be deductible as ordinary business expenses. There's a lot, but basically financial assistance is number one.
Well, and along those lines, Kyle, I mean, it's becoming clear that the coronavirus is not going to go away anytime soon. In your view, I guess, what's our best path to long-term economic growth as we look forward?
Well, I think that, you know, we do need to focus on the long term. And if we look at what a lot of other countries have done, they've done a lot better job than us of getting the virus under control. And the effect of that is I think their economies are going to recover much faster. So we do need to think about whatever it's going to take in terms of increased testing. If it means, you know, taking a step or two backwards in terms of some of the reopening that we've done, yeah, I think we'd be a lot better off with a month or two of some economic challenges to get the virus under control. And then I think you'll see economic growth follow from that. But if we're just lingering around for, you know, however many months or you know, God forbid, years dealing with this and and the outbreak going on, I think it's hard to have a positive outlook on the economy.
Josh, as the federal government deliberates on what aid it's going to offer moving forward, you know, we continue to hear the issue of software complications at the state level come up. Can you explain what software has to do with decisions around unemployment benefits?
Yeah, well, as I said, you know, at our department alone, we've provided payments to more than 600,000 unique individuals since March alone. And so a lot of that is done through automated systems. And what happens is when Congress comes in and changes either the amounts or the eligibility or how any of this works, it requires that we spend time developing computer code essentially to roll out so that we can make these payments in an automated way. Because if we had to handle all these manually, the waits that have been too long for some would be significantly longer. And so we're waiting because we've got to wait not just until any statute or legislation is passed, but many times until it's interpreted by the Department of Labor, which sometimes takes days. And only then can we start to really put the pen to paper, so to speak, into developing the software to pay benefits accordingly.
If Congress passes legislation that provides a percentage of an individual's previous income, will that be more difficult to implement than just a flat rate for everybody?
So significantly more difficult. Now, fortunately, in Indiana, we've got a modernized computer system that backs our unemployment insurance program. And so I think easier for us than some states that are still operating off of old mainframe systems. But there's no doubt about it that when we require each of those individuals that's claiming benefits to have their own calculation based on data that's attributable to them, it's a much more complex thing to do than to add that flat amount.
What software are we using in Indiana?
Oh, my goodness. You know, it's got Java. It's got a lot of the newer technologies that are out there. But you're talking to the wrong person if you want the details on that. I know that there are some states. You've seen some of these stories in other states where they've asked for COBOL programmers, a language that's really been out of use for a long time, trying to pull them out of retirement to do code. We don't have that problem here. A number of modern softwares and computer code underlie our system.
Yeah, we've heard of those problems being prevalent elsewhere, so we were just curious. So, Kyle, a lot of people are in a tight place right now. I guess it's also worth noting that the eviction moratorium in Indiana is set to expire at the end of the month. Even if we assume that additional stimulus will be passed, people might, in all likelihood, not receive that for weeks. What kind of an economic impact might that gap have?
It's hard to say, but I think it's going to be significant. It'll depend upon how landlords and others, respond to it. You know, hopefully not too aggressively. It's probably not in their interest if they know those benefits are coming, that they'll be able to hold out and work with renters. But there's certainly a significant portion of the state who are going to have trouble meeting those kind of basic bills for covering their housing, food, and other basic living expenses.
Barbara Kwan, some have argued that the expiration of the additional federal unemployment benefits will incentivize workers to go back to work. Others say that there aren't necessarily jobs to return to. How are small businesses impacted by individuals losing these additional benefits?
Wow. Right now, they just need workers, and that's a problem for them to be able to get incentivize people to come back to work. I don't know if there's a way we can do that, but it is certainly helpful. I don't blame folks for wanting to keep receiving the same benefit, but when businesses have to close down for 8 days or permanently because they don't have employees, that is a problem. We've had, it wasn't a problem for us before COVID hit and finding qualified workers. So you can imagine how it is now grown tremendously through the coronavirus crisis. And so we need to find a way to help people get through this, but not make it a disincentive to go to work.
Josh, state and local governments are also facing financial stresses. Can you explain how the budget for unemployment benefits works here at the state level?
Well, yeah, and we could probably do a whole show on, but basically the regular state unemployment benefits are funded by a tax on wages. So all Indiana private employers are responsible for paying a contribution based on their own unique experience for each employee that they hire each year. Now, that funds our state's unemployment insurance trust fund, and that's where we pay all benefits to individuals that are eligible under that program. Now, the extra, the add-on benefits, so the $600 that we've talked about a lot through this phone, as well as the pandemic unemployment assistance for self-employed and independent contractors, those are federally funded at this point in time. But we have seen a significant drop in our state's unemployment insurance trust fund that really had been on the rise over the last decade, working towards a healthy balance. And all of that has really been thrown into jeopardy as we've gone through this coronavirus situation.
What happens if we exhaust that budget?
Yeah, so there is a process in place where the state can receive an advance from the federal government to continue paying benefits. We did that during the Great Recession. Borrowed in 2008 all the way through 2014. And it's a fairly smooth process and one that we've been through before. So the average Hoosier should not notice that at all. The benefit recipient should not notice that process at all. But it does have some consequences at the state level and things that we'll have to talk about, potentially the carrying of interest that the state would have to pay on the federal advance. But it doesn't jeopardize individuals' ability to receive benefits.
We're talking about Indiana's economic situation as the pandemic rolls on. Josh Richardson is who we're speaking with right now. He's chief of staff at the Indiana Department of Workforce Development. We also have Kyle Anderson with us. He's clinical professor of business economics at Indiana University's Kelly School of Business. Barbara Quant is also with us, the Indiana State Director of the National Federation of Independent Business. And we have a listener voicemail from Patsy. Let's listen to that now.
Hi, this is Patsy from Moreland, Indiana. I'm calling about the unemployment situation, and I have received calls back, and sometimes it does take a while, but I still have a question about the website. This past weekend was totally different and had a place to file back claims for unemployment, which is the problem I'm having now. I wonder if you could address that situation. I have originally filed back in March and still have not received anything. Thank you. Bye-bye.
Josh, what changed?
So it's a tough question because we're making changes all the time and there are different situations that apply to unique situations. And so I worry here that I'll get a little away from Patsy's unique issue, but we do have scenarios where individuals maybe for whatever reason, either they didn't understand that the programs were available to them, or in some cases they thought that they would try to get by without receiving the unemployment benefits, have filed late. That's provided challenges to our system because we've wanted to be kind to those late filings and offering, you know, in many cases, more opportunities for individuals to file late than they have under the traditional rules of the program. And so we've constantly been working to make upgrades. Filing those back vouchers is one of the more challenging things for our software to do. But we've continued to increase some functionality that allow people to sort of go back and say, this is a week that I wish that I would have claimed for and I hadn't yet. So I think perhaps she's referring to that change, but, you know, truly, this is one of these things where we have been doing releases and upgrades and making changes to our system on a weekly basis because there has just always been a new challenge that has popped up, and that's a good example of one. So I don't know that everyone has seen that difference, but there will be some individuals that now have access to vouchers that they didn't prior have access to.
Kyle Anderson, when the economy plunged months ago, there was talk about whether an economic recovery curve would look V-shaped or U-shaped. What's the difference between that recovery curve, those curves, I guess, and are we on either of those curves?
So I would say that the difference is basically how long you stay at this depressed level of economic activity. So in a V-shaped curve, you just kind of bounce back, and it's basically how long do we get to back to where we were? When does the economy look like it did, say, in January of this year, or when does it look like in 2019? I think that, you know, we're kind of out the window already for what most would consider a V-shaped curve, even though, you know, we have bounced back. Obviously, a lot more is going on now than was going on in April. Unemployment, as Justin talked about at the beginning, was 17.2% in Indiana in April, and now it's 11. So we're seeing some bounce back, but, you know, I think we're much more to look like a U-shaped kind of thing where we're going to be getting back to our better levels over the next several years. If you look in the past at times that Indiana's had unemployment at 11 or 12%, it takes 5 years to get back to 5%. And I don't know that, you know, everything's a little bit different this time, but I think that's what we might be looking at.
Where would you say then we are along the curve? Are we still headed down? Are we at the bottom? Are we headed up?
I mean, it depends on what your baseline is, right? We're certainly doing a lot more than we were doing in April and May, and that will probably continue along. But I like to compare things to where we were a year ago, and we're significantly off that, and we're going to be that way for, you know, at least for the rest of the year, where economic activity is lower this year than it was last year for each relative month.
I heard 5 years a second ago. I mean, the virus is a big variable here, but are we able to predict how long it might take to recover the economy? Could it really take that long?
Well, 5 years is for employment. So even as the economy recovers, it just takes a long time for people to get back to work. People mm-hmm. who've been put out of work, a lot of times the jobs that come back aren't the ones that were there before the recession. And so even though our economy may pick up next year and the following year, and unemployment will come down, but it's not going to be back to 3% the way it was in January anytime soon.
Let's see, Josh, how long can someone receive unemployment benefits in Indiana?
Well, that's a little bit of a moving target. So under the traditional program, individuals in Indiana qualify for 26 weeks of unemployment benefits. Under the CARES Act, there was an additional 13 weeks added. So, you know, you get then to 39 potential weeks. So that 13 weeks is set to expire at the end of 2020. Right now, Indiana is actually triggered onto an extended benefit period. And that has to do with where our unemployment rate is at versus last year. And so there's another 13 weeks. So an individual could be eligible for 52 weeks of benefits, but there are a lot of different moving pieces here. One of those is set to expire by the end of the year. The other will expire if our unemployment rate continues to drop. And so individuals should continue to pay attention at our DWD website because, you know, those things will change as the time goes on. They can count on the 26 weeks so long as they continue to meet eligibility requirements. The other extensions subject to change.
We have one last listener voicemail, and Josh, it's another one for you. This one's from David. Let's listen.
I am a freelance designer, and I applied for gig work unemployment. However, I do get Social Security, so I haven't heard back from anybody yet. And I'm wondering if receiving Social Security is going to disqualify me for any type of unemployment. Thanks, and appreciate your help on this.
Josh, in about 30 seconds, what do we say to David?
Yeah, so in most cases, that's not going to be a problem. When David goes through his filing, it's going to ask him about his outside income sources. And the most important thing he can do is read those questions carefully and answer them honestly. It is unlikely to impact his benefits.
Well, I want to thank all of our guests for taking the time today. It is clear we could spend a lot more time on this. Kyle Anderson is a clinical professor of business economics at Indiana University's Kelly School of Business. Kyle, thanks for your time today.
Thanks for having me on.
Josh Richardson is chief of staff at the Indiana Department of Workforce Development. Thank you for your time and for fielding all those phone calls.
No problem, and thank you for having me.
Barbara Quant is the Indiana State Director of the National Federation of Independent Business. Barbara, thanks for coming back.
Yeah, thank you, Matt, and I hope there's better news next time.
Indeed. Our producers are Drew Dodlin and Maggie Galon. Scott Cameron's our managing editor. Adam Gross is our technical director and composed our theme. Our podcast can be found wherever you get podcasts. Be sure to subscribe so you always know what we're up to. Tomorrow, we'll spend the hour with former Indiana First Lady Judy O'Bannon, and we'll talk to her about her decades of supporting preservation efforts around the state. We're on Twitter and Facebook at All in Indiana, and I'm Matt Pelsert. Thanks for listening. This is All In.